Very white guy got
air horn.
A new air horn toy. We're in trouble.
You can blame Ricky. It's the jingle palette. Jingle palette.
Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by very white guy.
And he's very white indeed. We are joined today by Michael and Kimberly from the Something in Common Podcast. What's up, guys?
What up? We lose Michael.
Hello, how are you?
We are good. We're so excited to have you guys on the show. And we're going to get into all of that. Let's do this quick housekeeping real quick, and then we'll start talking about you guys. If this is your first time hearing us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. We love to get feedback. So if you want to give us some feedback, you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes.
Side eye.
Or Stitcher. All of you Johnners out there, get on it. If you give us a 5-star review, we will read it on air. Shout out to the black guy who tips. We also have 2 new ways for you to give us feedback.
Can I just, as a little plug, this is in honor of our 50th episode. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but 50's kind of like a lot. That's 50th episode. And the original Johnner, Carl, he demanded to be present for episode 50.
Yes.
So he's going to be here next week. We got a whole big bunch of stuff planned. But in honor of Carl, we're instituting 2 new things for you guys to leave feedback for the 50th show.
That's right. So you can send us an email at interracialjohn@gmail.com. We will read your email, assuming it's not crazy. And you can leave us a voicemail at 657 Johnners. That's 657 JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we will play it on the air. Again, that's another shout out to the black guy who tips. Don't say anything crazy.
I gotta say kudos to the vanity 657 Johnners phone number. I like it.
Yeah,
I'm glad Johnners was available.
Yeah, lucky us. So back to our guests. Michael and Kimberly have been together for 2.5 years and married for 6 months. Ooh, you guys are newlyweds. They have a blended family that consists of 4 beautiful daughters ranging in ages from 10 to 16. Ooh, we're going to get into that. Michael and Kimberly decided to create this podcast to lend a voice to the male and female perspectives as it relates to relationships, pop culture, children, money, health, wellness, and much more. You can find them on Twitter at something n common, also on Instagram something_in_common, and on their website somethingincommon.com. all of those links will be on the show notes, and we'll give them again at the end of the show. But again, welcome you guys. We're so happy to have you here.
Do you guys feel like the Black Brady Bunch? Here's a story.
Yes.
Of a lovely
lady. My wife
first
says the Black Brady Bunch all the time.
Too funny. So,
oh, wait.
And they're all girls? You have all girls?
Every last one of them.
Wow.
Yes. 2 13, 1 10, 16.
Woo.
You have 2 daughters at 13 at the same time in the same house. 2 teenage menstruating teenage girls at the same time. I do not envy you one bit. Not at all.
You know, you have the days where, you know, they get along just fine, and then some days they're at each other's throat. You never know what the day is going to hold.
Hey, Michael.
You make the best of it.
Have you guys been living together long enough where all the women's cycles kind of like sync up and like everyone's PMSing at the same time? Has that happened to you?
Yes.
That's when I leave the house.
I'm going to go for like 3 days. You guys in Baltimore?
And we're... Yes.
Was it like a casino or something you can go to? What's nearby? I got to go to Indian River or something. Eagle Creek. I'll be gone for a weekend.
Oh, too funny, too funny.
Well, that's the good part. I work at a casino, so I'm there every day.
There you go. There you go. So we've been listening to your podcast. That's awesome. Really enjoying your interaction with each other is really awesome. And your love really shines through, which is fantastic. And it's great to have... newer couple. Drew and I have been married 14 years.
Get it right.
And we've been together like 17 years. I think it's around, right?
How you enjoying that, Drew?
Well, depends on what time is it? What day is this?
Wait.
I'm kidding. It's awesome. We love it.
Yeah. So I guess, but first question for you is, have you noticed a difference between pre-marriage and post-marriage? Do you think that has changed anything in the relationship for you both?
take that one, baby.
Absolutely. It definitely has changed. In just the brief 6 months we've been married, I mean, it has totally changed. You can definitely see that we're settling in, you know. And I thought, it's not going to be a big deal because we lived together prior to getting married, so it shouldn't be a... It shouldn't change, but yes, absolutely. Things change. Mm-hmm. The romance kind of fades a little.
That is so
nice. The day-to-day grind takes over.
I'm the most romantic man she knows.
Too funny, too funny.
Yes, you are, babe.
You better be. I hope so. I hope you are, yes. And so you guys decided to do the podcast. I know, Michael, you do another podcast, correct?
Yeah, I started off doing the podcast. I have a degree in mass communication, so radio was always something that I was interested in and wanted to do. So I started my podcast first, and it just kind of evolved into something where I've learned I wasn't that great at hosting a show by myself. I have no idea why I just didn't. I mean, just being totally honest, I wasn't that great at doing one by myself. And I noticed me and my wife, the one thing we do a lot of is we just sit around and talk about any and everything. We're getting old, so all we do is sit around and watch the news all day. And
for yourself.
Well, I mean, we sit around and watch the news. We were discussing everything that was going on in the world and pop culture. And I just thought it'd be a cool idea if we did a show together. And so my show kind of, I still do my show from time, my solo show from time to time, but it just kind of evolved into us sitting together and doing what we do at home every day, which is just talk about any and everything.
That's the same way that we kind of the genesis of our podcast, like, you know, we just sit around and fucking shoot the shit and talk, and I don't know, why don't we record it and see if two people like it or something.
at least two.
That's cool. We were talking with Karen, say that again, from the Black Guy Who Tips, Rodimus and her do that, yeah. Black Guy Tips show, and the fact that there are most of the podcasts that I like tend to be partners or couples, you know, not necessarily male, female, but people that are, you know, spending a lot of time together in life, either best friends or, and I just think there's some sort of je ne sais quoi, camaraderie that comes across over a podcast, an intimate component. And it comes across with you guys as well. And that's part of why I like it.
Absolutely.
And yeah, like I said, it's just what we do. It's basically us, like, we're just sitting at to be watching TV just without a microphone in front of my face, so it just kind of rolled from there, and you know, we've got great reviews so far, so it's turned out very well, and we're enjoying it. And we've been going on two months.
Yay,
yeah, we just did
months.
Yeah, just 2 months. This past episode,
we're enjoying
it's
it
flying
too.
By.
That's awesome. And so, Kim, since this was your first foray into podcasting, did you like it right away? Were there things you felt you needed to get used to? What was your first, you know, what was that first month like for you?
I liked it right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done like radio interviews a lot, and I've co-hosted on different online radio shows. So I was a little nervous because I was like, are people going to want to hear me every week? I don't know. Hopefully they will, but maybe not. So I was a little nervous about that, but after the first episode, it's kind of been like second nature.
Yeah, and do you guys find yourselves kind of like, oh no, save that for the show? We do that all the time, which is funny.
Yes.
We'll start our conversation like, oh, pop. No, that's going on the show, so don't talk about it anymore. Let's keep it.
It's just so much stuff going on, it's hard to pack everything into an hour.
Mm.
So,
absolutely.
Who does
that? We're still learning. Technically, we're both really new to this, so it's trying to make it entertaining and just condense everything into an hour, which has been my biggest challenge because it's so much stuff going on right now that you can talk about.
So much.
You guys fallen into, like, I don't say roles, but like Karen was saying that Rod does a lot of the sort of production and finding various pieces, and someone does the recording part, and Leslie and I have sort of divided some labor in that regard. I don't do any of the production, like all the show notes, all that shit you guys got before the show, all her. I didn't touch it.
Production shows, I do all of that stuff. I'm still learning, so I've had the pleasure of dealing with a lot of people in podcasting. I mean, mm-hmm. Rashani from the Single Simulcast, he's been a tremendous help to me.
Shout out to Rashani. I love him. He's
Rashani's
the best.
That's my guy right there. Two California boys. So he has really kind of just taken me under his wing with a lot of stuff. Ricky Hines has been great. helping me with a lot of the production stuff. So I'm
AUA.
Sitting here. What's that?
I said AUA. Shout out to Ricky's podcast, yeah. AUA.
They're great. So, you know, everybody has been really helpful. So I'm still learning, but for the production part, she's basically here. She's
Stop it. I'm the talent and personality, and I'm the social networking guru.
Drew, you're definitely the social networking person because I don't.
I feel like I add nothing. I feel like I don't do much. I don't. Say Anything? I don't want to build anything bought, manufactured, produced, or made. I'm that way with the podcast. I don't want to do anything, see anything, record anything. I just want to show up and maybe be a little bit drunk and talk. Can I do that? What role is that?
That's so me. Like, I've got my margarita right now. Like, that's me.
Yes. But we need that. We need that. It works.
At the start of every show, you can guarantee she has a bottle of wine or something in front of her.
We might have talked about this on our podcast, maybe with Karen, but there was a period of time where like we were kind of figuring things out, like maybe the first like 15 episodes. And I was coming with like, you know, oh, I found this and this article. I was trying to like get all this information. And then like Leslie would be like, nope, we're not talking about this. We're not doing this. And I'd get all like shitty, like kind of like, well, you didn't take my story. So at some point I was just like, you know what? I don't know what this dynamic is. I don't know what this like struggle is with doing this, but I'm just going to cede control to you. You just go ahead.
Right, because you know what it was? Like you were coming at it from a very like, oh, it's us and it's a couple and we're doing this thing. I had my producer hat on and I was really cutthroat. I was like, nope, that won't work. Nope, that's not enough. Nope. Like I was very just, I had no mercy at all.
You do announce it as I'm your host. Yes. And I'm joined by everyone. That's true. I'm not saying the word co-host could or couldn't be in there or we're your host. Well, I'm just saying it's always been that way.
Well, it's worked for 49 episodes so far. So why mess with
give a ding to that.
I like that with Michael when he tries to post things on Facebook or Twitter and I go back and I'm like, no, got to edit that. Got to take it down. That's stinks. I'm all over it.
And have any of your girls heard the show? What do they think about it?
Well, my daughter thinks it's she thinks it's cool. She wants to do a show. They want to do a show this summer. So.
Yeah, our 13-year-olds want to do something together.
Ooh, cool.
My
13-year-old
has a YouTube channel, so awesome. She does it. My daughter does a YouTube channel, and she wants to turn that thing into a podcast with
sweet.
With our other 13-year-olds. That'll be interesting.
So cool.
Into the video games and technology and all this stuff. So they want to do kind of a video game-based podcast. So
we're going to get
set up for that this summer.
Oh, that is so awesome. And I think I heard some craziness about you guys driving across the country with all of these children.
Grand Canyon? Yeah, 3,000 miles?
Our national moving on this summer.
Is it 3,500 miles each way or round trip?
It's actually 2,600 miles one way.
Oh, man. Are you guys renting a minivan? You're going to put those miles on your car?
I'm scared.
We just bought a minivan a few months ago, so we're going to break it in and throw it on the highway.
Minivans are awesome. Trip. I just saw my best friend. She has one child, and she has a Range Rover or something. And she was like, I need a new car. And I was like, oh, are you getting a minivan? And she looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, but minivans are so comfortable. I wish I had a reason to have a minivan. That's how comfortable
they are. Them captain chairs are nice.
They are nice. There's room for everything in there.
I love it. I'm all about the sliding door and the trunk opening. I'm all about all of that sliding stuff. And it's so big and putting all the seats down and you just got this big open space. You can put everything in there.
Everything. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
I'm getting used to it.
Uh-oh.
Before I met Kim, I've been married before, so I've been divorced. And when I got divorced, I went and bought myself a Chrysler 300C. That was my woman mobile. And I bought that car and it had the rims on it and it was low to the ground and had a bunch of power under the hood. It had the Hemi engine in it.
You come in rolling in like it looked like a Bentley sometimes. Like, damn, is that a Bentley? No, Chrysler 300.
Yeah, so a Bentley pulls up next to
you. Oh, too funny. All right. So you're going across. Yes, I think the minivans are great. So you're going cross country. Do you guys have the app Periscope yet?
No.
Okay. So Periscope is fantastic. I only mention it because I think it could be very useful on your trip. It basically is like a live stream through Twitter. So it's super easy. You press a button, it connects to your Twitter account, and you can broadcast from your phone, your iPhone, your smartphone, whatever, right? Whatever's going on right there. People can join and they can like it and they can, you know, type in and you can talk back to them. You can do it for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, an hour, however long you want. And so you could do these really cool dispatches and you can save them or you cannot save them and they're never visible again. And it automatically tweets out to your Twitter followers. It's really cool.
But if you do save them, it would be like you could have your whole, like a video log of your entire trip with each of you doing different videos with different periscopes because it's all free on your phone.
Yeah, it's super cool. So check it out. I would suggest.
It's a lot easier. We had already talked about doing like a blog or something as we did this little trip, but if it's something like that, we'll definitely check that out. That seems a lot easier than the way we had it.
I foresee in your future a lot of the 13-year-olds like, oh my God, mom and dad are driving me crazy. We've already seen this. Oh, jeez.
No, they're going to love it. It's a beautiful country. So that's really cool. They're going to get to see it all. Yeah, it's going to be cool. So you're from California.
About the 90s R&B and hip-hop.
Yes.
Oh, for real.
Yes. You have to definitely do at least a couple periscopes with you and Michael jamming out to some 90s R&B and the kids mortified. It'll be awesome. I'll sign up to watch that.
We plan on driving crazy. We're definitely going to plan driving them crazy.
Sounds good. Sounds good. All right, let's get into it, Drew.
All right.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So Morgan Freeman likes his weed. Did you hear about this?
Mm-mm.
So he defended his marijuana use by saying, I'll eat it, drink it, smoke it, or snort it. So Morgan Freeman doesn't know why marijuana isn't legal. And in a recent interview with the Daily Beast, the actor detailed his support for the movement to legalize pot, reasoning that pot has many useful uses, unlike alcohol. They used to say, smoke that stuff, you get hooked, Freeman says. My wife got me onto it many years ago.
Wait a second. Now he's blaming his wife?
His first wife. He says, I'll take it however it comes. I'll eat it. I'll drink it. I'll smoke it. I'll snort it. I have fibromyalgia pain in this arm, and the only thing that offers any relief is marijuana. Mom, are you listening? I know you got fibromyalgia. I've told you.
You have been telling your mom.
She said she'd eat it. She goes, I won't smoke it, but if I had edibles, I'd eat it.
She needs an edible, yeah.
Yeah, maybe like we're moving to Michigan. They got marijuana.
A lollipop for her or something, yeah.
They'real about kids who have grand mal seizures, and have discovered that marijuana eases those seizures to where their children can have a life. That right there to me says legalize it across the board.
Across the board.
He also made some weird reference about Woodstock 69 versus 99 and that all the fights and problems in 99 is because they didn't allow legal weed. But anyway.
Oh, so he's claiming that the difference between the 99 Woodstock and the 69 Woodstock was they didn't allow weed at the 99 one. So people went ape shit crazy.
Yeah.
They had like a big like brawl or riot there. Or
MTV was there. They started a fire during like Metallica's set.
Like a bunch of girls got like assaulted or something. It was really
bad.
Wasn't good. That was definitely a bad scene. Mm-mm.
That was the end of Woodstock. You blew it.
Well,
that's got nothing to do with it. Morgan Freeman, he's about that weed life.
He said he'll eat it, drink it, smoke it, or snort it.
You know, I saw that, and to my knowledge, I didn't think you could inject or snort marijuana.
That's new.
Maybe there's some kind of new weed thing I don't even know about.
I don't even know about it.
Never even heard about snorting weed.
Well, good on you.
They got, what is it, the vaporized weed now? So I'm sure maybe they'll come up with something where you can inject it here pretty soon. If Morgan Freeman has anything to do with it.
Maybe he's on the cutting edge. He knows this like ahead of time before everybody else does.
Well, it's not ironic or funny, but sort of divergent here that the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry, has tried mightily for a long time to get the effects of THC, the cannabinoids, that provide relief in particular for like chemotherapy and cancer patients without it being, an illicit drug. So they've tried to synthesize THC and get it into a pill format. And everyone that all the patients, they're just like, it's just not, doesn't have the same impact. It's not the same effect. And with actual states that have medical marijuana, there's like different strains that have different, you know, this one might be more analgesic or more calmative.
Oh, so like,
this
it's one, like one might be you get better for pain, one might be better
absolutely
for nausea.
And in fact,
I didn't know that.
The one that the that Freeman references about grandma's seizures was a case that got Sanjay Gupta to reverse his course on weed legalization. And he said, this is why I'm changing my stance. He used to be against marijuana legalization. It was because of this girl, and she moved to Colorado, and there was a specific strain. It might even be named after her, but a strain of marijuana that was lower in the psychoactive components, like the cannabinoids.
She wouldn't get high.
She wouldn't get the, but, you know, like the traditional high, but it was higher in some other, you know, there's like multitude of different components to marijuana. It's not just THC. There's other things, but it's lower in the active cannabinoids and higher in some else. Yeah.
Interesting.
There's, I think there's What'd you say?
I said that was a Sanjay Gupta special. I believe it was on CNN or MSNBC.
Yeah, yeah. He did a whole, yeah, CNN.
They did a special.
Yeah, that was exactly it.
Wow. Well, good on you, Morgan Freeman. We're moving very soon. We are moving 800 miles away, not quite as far as you guys are going. We're moving in about a month, under a month now. And the state we're moving to has medical marijuana pretty widely used. And I think we were just there house hunting, which wasn't a very fruitful trip. But and there's going to be a ballot initiative, I guess, they're working on right now to make it just like Colorado, Washington, D.C.
And they did weird with medical. Like some states, like New Jersey did a medical marijuana, but you have to – there's only like 18 people that have it. Like it's so restrictive and there's kind of like no mechanisms to get it. So even if you do get your card, it's sort of like weird. And Michigan went with a medical marijuana that – made it legal, you had to get a prescription, but then they didn't do anything that California did with the dispensaries. So even though there's like medical marijuana, there's no infrastructure to like distribute, disseminate, and
so
I would say tax.
So do people pay for it? I don't understand
you,
that.
You pay for the license, and then you have a supplier or a grower who's, you know, someone who's, I guess, approved or
licensed
okay with.
Or
I don't even think it's licensed. I think it's just you can only grow it if you have somebody that has a card under you and you're growing it for that person. Oh, and there's probably some registration that the grower has to do.
Sounds complicated.
Yeah, but the thing that's weird is how do you go from that to Colorado? Like Colorado went from nothing. So when they went to legalization, it's like, okay, we need to have you know, distributors and growers. We have all these different – and we're going to tax it at every level. And I don't know. Michigan doesn't have any of that infrastructure in place. But I guess neither did Washington.
They'll figure it out, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, here in Philadelphia, crazy.
See where it goes.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think it's been interesting seeing the...
New at 11.
Oops, sorry. The next president, what they're going to do. Because, you know, President Obama has been very... the federal government's not going to get involved with these issues. You know, they're going to let the states do what they want to do. But I also think it's interesting if it's a Republican that gets the nod in 2016, because it's very hard for them to go against states' rights stuff. That's like, you know, supposedly their thing. Except when it comes to women's bodies, in which case they're very happy to get involved. But but so I think it'll be interesting. I've always said I've never understood why a Republican hasn't run on the legalized marijuana like ban. I feel like they could really get a lot of votes that
half
they wouldn't
the country
normally get. So I think it's like 56% of people would like it. I just always think about the, you know, the issues related to mass incarceration and the targeting of Black and Brown communities with regard to especially these small possession amounts of pot. It's so stupid to be tying these people up in our legal system, to be ruining their lives in some cases. And, you know, they prey on them at every step of the way. They arrest them unfairly, even though white people smoke just as much pot as any other race, depending on the age bracket, more even. And then, you know, they put them in jail. They have these really unfair bail systems that are set up, and people are stuck in jail for, you know, sometimes up to 3, 4, 6 months because they couldn't afford $500 to get out. They're not even convicted of anything. And then they go to them and they say, hey, if you plead guilty, we'll let you out today. And they do. And now they have a felony on their record, and they didn't do anything wrong as far as harming society.
They did shit that's now legal, right? I mean, like,
literally.
Baby, listen, they got people in jail on marijuana offenses, and they've got those same individuals now out doing those same things legally in Colorado. There are people in jail serving a sentence because they didn't like retroactively, like, okay, weed's legal, like, you know, grandfather, everybody's in jail for weed offenses. Y'all get released now. They're not going to do that. that wasn't on the ballot. But it's kind of crazy.
It's nuts.
I apologize. I just used ableist language and people don't like the word crazy. It's disproportionately inappropriate.
Yes.
The application.
It makes no sense.
Makes no sense.
None at all. So this crazy thing happened here in Pennsylvania. And the craziest thing about it, that it's a friend of mine that it happened to, my friend Julie Crone, who I used to work with when we worked in restaurants. She's a mom. And, well, let's play the news report. You guys can kind of hear what happened to her.
At 11, imagine calling 911 only to have your call routed to another city.
A local woman says that happened to her, and what happened next left upset.
NBC 10's Denise Nakano is live in Riverton, Burlington County. Denise, fill us in.
Well, she was here at the park on the playground playing with her son when she got hurt and then called 911. Well, her phone call got routed to a cell phone tower in Philadelphia. And from there, she had to go through hoops trying to get help.
Anything could have happened.
Julie Grone is safe at home with her newborn daughter limping on a broken foot. You can hardly tell she had a 5-inch-long gash on the top of her head. But a week ago, she wasn't sure how an accident on a playground would turn out when she called 911 for help.
It was probably the scariest moment of my life. I'm 40 weeks pregnant. I'm bleeding from my head. My ankle is broken. I know it's broken.
Grone was playing with her 2-year-old son on the playground of Riverton Memorial Park in Burlington County on May 8th. She accidentally hit her head, fell sideways to avoid falling on her unborn child, and snapped her foot. Then the call to 911.
And speaking to one person, then speaking with another person, and saying that they cannot do what I need them to do.
Grone says her call to 911 went to Philadelphia, then transferred to Camden instead of Burlington County, where a dispatcher told her to call police herself.
I had to clean the blood off of my phone to try to get the dial, and then I got through and everything was good.
3 days after the accident, she gave birth to her healthy daughter, Allison. The day after that, she underwent surgery to get a metal plate and 14 screws inserted into her foot.
14.
She just hopes the next call to 911 won't be someone's last.
She didn't just break her ankle.
Hope that, you know, people, the dispatchers, know what to do from now on.
So, yeah,
that was a. We saw that report, and I didn't realize it was that she went 4 days before having the surgery because she was going to deliver,
right?
And then had to deliver with a broken ankle. Right? Yeah. You're like pushing, and your legs are up. That's got to suck. And then the plate they put in had 14 screws. That is a serious break.
Well, yeah, because the thing is, I talked to her. She couldn't pivot because she's 40 weeks pregnant. Right. Not an easy thing to do.
And she didn't want to hit her belly.
And she didn't want to hit her belly. So her feet stayed where they were and her body went the opposite direction.
With a different amount of weight than
exactly.
She's used to.
And her ankle went.
Balance. Oh.
What exactly happened? I saw she was at the playground. How did she fall? Was it just a freak accident?
Yeah, it was really freak. She just had walked into, it was a low, like underneath the swing set or underneath the slide, she bumped her head right into one of those bars that are, guess, good height for kids, not so great for moms or for adults. And she was bleeding and she fell backwards. And then that's when she fell to the side so she didn't hurt the baby. But
She bumped her head and didn't knock herself out. She had the wherewithal to turn her body so she didn't fall on her stomach. Very lucky.
Yeah. And so, I guess they're doing an investigation just to kind of make sure. Normally, it's supposed to route very quickly. Even if it gets bounced to a tower that's out of the city, it should direct you to the correct county so that they can get 911 to you. But this went through two. And then does not surprise me that Camden would have issues connecting a second time. I don't even know how those switches work with the cell phone. So,
And they tell you you're not allowed to use it for 911. It's not allowed to be a home alarm system. There's a bunch of things that you can't use a cell phone for because it's got the towers rather than an actual address that comes up on caller ID. And I've used – so we don't have a home phone. We use cell phones exclusively. And I've used it to call not recently but years ago the police. And I had the same issue. They were like, well, you know, where are you? We've got to route you to the right dispatch. Like it wasn't a simple thing.
They did. Yeah. And you weren't bleeding profusely.
I wasn't. I wanted to ask you this. I don't mean to race this or race that. But it's got all the hallmarks of mainstream media's viral ability. A pregnant white woman injured. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying that it would have been the same if it was a black person. I don't know
if it would have been the same. I will say I wouldn't have given a shit about it except for that I know Julie. So that would have changed the story for me personally. but I'm really happy that Julie's doing great and that Allison is healthy and beautiful. And so thankful for all of that. And I just thought it was kind of crazy because I saw the story and I was like, wait a second, that just happened to her. So kind of just weird that it ends up on the news. Something else that was on the news. You guys have heard about this blue alert law that our president signed into law yesterday?
Yeah.
Yep.
My eyes hurting even just thinking about it.
That's one of those stories you don't know where to grab it at. Like,
It's so much just to get at us. But for those of you who do not know, President Obama signed into a law a measure that will require instant nationwide blue alerts to warn about threats to police officers and help track down the suspects who carry them out. The Rafael Ramos and Wei-Jian Liu National Blue Alert Act of 2015 is named for the two New York Police Department officers killed in an ambush attack last December. The assailant, who had shot his girlfriend earlier in the day and then threatened on his Instagram account to kill police officers in retaliation for the recent police killings in Ferguson, Missouri, and New York City. But that information never made it to New York. So, yeah.
My thing is, are you like, okay, and I'm not making light of any police officer being ambushed, killed, anything of that nature, but I would think he would put more focus on all the people and children that are being killed in this country by the police officers. Like, I don't know. I just don't know where to go with this. I'm not saying you should take, you know, we got children being shot down in the street by police officers on a consistent basis in this country. That should be your focus right now. You know, I think he's playing both sides of the fence here.
Yeah, he is.
I keep these happy, these people happy. You know, you're on your way out of the office. Get some balls about yourself, man, and take care of this kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. I'm sure police officers think this is great. I mean, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I think he should be putting a lot of his focus on, you know, all these children and all these black men and women being killed by police.
Absolutely.
This is my personal views on it.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you. My thing is that, you know, I just wonder, it's just so much for show because, you know, police officers are really not killed that often. It's a very rare occasion that it happens. They're injured plenty, but in terms of like being killed in the act of somebody actively killing them, they die of heart attacks, they drown, there's car accidents, but really an actual person killing them is not something that happens, you know, even once a month in the country. Okay. It's not a normal occurrence. So that's my first thing. And then secondarily, it's very extra rare for it to be a planned anything. I don't even remember the last time there actually was something planned besides that white guy in Pennsylvania who had attacked those one people. But he was just crazy. Like,
and he was out on the loose for months.
For months. They were just searching the woods for him. And then this most recent case, which I would also like to mention, that if we had an alert that had to do with domestic violence and violence against women, this would have been prevented. Because so many of these killings, whether they involve police or not, when men kill people, they go on these sprees. The first thing that you see first, they killed their mom. They killed their ex-girlfriend. They killed their wife. It's always like this. So that would have been a little bit more effective, I think. So let's start with that because his first victim is completely obliterated in the discussion about these crimes. And then the other part of it is just, I just don't even understand the purpose of it. Like, it doesn't benefit him in any way. I don't know. He doesn't need any more, like, collateral with these people. I don't understand the idea behind it. Do you guys have silver alerts in Baltimore?
Yeah, we do.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like you said, it's such a small number that you're normally, when a police officer is killed by somebody, the spotlight is already there. So it's, you know, they already know who did it and they're all, you know, the country's, everybody's looking for them. So, I mean, I think that there's already a big enough spotlight on it when it happens. And not to mention, when you become a police officer, you sign up knowing that it's a possibility something might happen to you, not that it should, but you sign up knowing that, rather than, you know, a woman or a person of color walking outside. You know, I didn't sign up to be shot when I walked outside. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, they get enough spotlight when it does happen.
Because basically what this is kind of, I was reading, it's kind of like an Amber Alert. So if something happens to a police officer, they send out alerts to
Well, and that's
everybody
not,
saying, okay, that kind
of, absolutely, Mike, but don't forget the, you know, naming this the Ramos and Lou bill, and that they're referencing specifically the individual that was, you know, doing some nonsense, wasn't related to the protest movement at all, but they tied it to the protest movement. They tied it to Black Lives Matter
movement.
Which
it didn't have anything
to do with.
It had nothing to do with it,
but they did, the mainstream. And this dude sent out like an Instagram saying he was going to do some shit. So I just, let's, based on that being the foundation for this bill,
right,
the number of like, what does that mean? Does that mean that people on Twitter that are like, you know, oh, you know, this effing cop and this and that, is that a blue alert?
Right.
Is, you know,
is Cop Watch going to be
Cop Watch a blue alert?
Blue alert?
Like, there's some, to me, troubling, I wouldn't say implications, but, you know, just like everything you see nowadays, like, oh, you know, 9/11 happened. Let's put in this Patriot Act. Yay, it's great. It's awesome. And then 10 years later, like, whoa, wait a minute. You guys are reading like every fucking email and cell phone message known to God.
But like, it's such a direct, like, and it's such just statistically, clearly a response to the Black Lives Matter movement.
That's my point.
Not just in this incident. It's reactionary, not just to this incident, but to the movement itself.
Correct.
Because police deaths have only decreased over the last 20 years, like all other crime, I might add, have only decreased. Nothing has gone up. No more police are getting killed than were killed last year or the year before that or the year before that. So the only thing that has changed right now for you to feel the need to protect the police is that Black people are like, fuck y'all, you can't kill
me. And Leslie, I'll give you an even better data point. This bill was introduced in 2010.
Yes.
It did not pass.
No.
It did not pass.
Right.
For a reason.
Now, because it's stupid.
Now you put Ramos and Lou's name on it. You fucking, you know, there's this Black Lives Matter movement. Push it right through.
Yeah. So DeRay got off a few tweets as he's wont to on the subject. So I'll read a few of them. He says, now I've been generally positive about your recent comments, police violence at POTUS. But this blue alert system is offensive. By signing this blue alert law, you made it clear that you stand firmly with those who not only wish to harm us, but actually harm us. You've got to give it to the National Fraternal Order of Police for sneaking in a federal blue alert system as police kill people. Hate is organized in America. He says on Malcolm X's 90th birthday, POTUS legislation creating a federal blue alert system to assist in protecting the police. America. If there was a Black alert system, it would be in constant use because Black folk are in constant danger from the police in America. And why didn't we hear about this blue alert legislation from the Congressional Black Caucus?
Word.
Who was on watch on this one? I'm still upset with POTUS, but I think I'm actually more upset with all the people who silently watched the blue alert get to his desk. I might die fighting to change policing in America. That my first thought after learning about the blue law system, that was his first thought, that he might die trying to change policing in America. Hate is organized. So you can follow DeRay McKesson at DeRay. Obviously a huge voice in the Black Lives Matter movement and a personal friend and wonderful individual on the planet Earth. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I normally, this isn't the stance I normally take, but
right about now, NWA court is in full effect. Judge Gray residing.
I was the wrong cue. I was trying to get to fuck the police.
Well, you didn't get it.
I didn't get it. That's right, but fuck the police. I'm not anti-cop. I'm really not. I'm not anti-cop.
Not either. My mother is an ex-police officer, but she even told me during training. Now, mind you, my mother was a cop in Waukegan, Illinois. But she always told me the stories. When they go through training, it's not part of your regulated training, but they tell you on the side, like, look, if you get into something, they always say dead men don't talk. So they're trained to kill.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the scary part about it. Like, you got these people that are, you know, being you know, they want you to think they're going through the police academy and all of them are these great people. I'm not saying all cops are bad, but you got a lot of them that come already with their mindset on how they look at minorities. And then you're giving them a gun and a badge and basically telling them, you know, this gun and a badge gives you the right to kill people.
Yeah. And I think I'm with you.
It's scary. It's very scary.
It's not individuals. It's not bad people. There's a awful lot. And it starts with everything. There's training is a problem. The power the FOP has is a problem. The lack of independent civilian oversight is a problem. The ability to do dirty in one department and get shifted to another city, state, and get hired again is a problem. There's like a multitude of problems with policing just in general. But I'm not against individuals or cops. You know, I get all the arguments, but just this, the fact that it's becoming this us, them, this, there needs to be a blue alert. It's just kind of, it rubs me very, very wrong.
Yeah.
I heard Dick Gregory say, he said, it's a reason why you don't see black cops going into white neighborhoods shooting white kids, because they not having it.
Nope.
I mean, that simple statement, a lot of perspective. Like, it's, why is this only happening to black and brown people?
And that's more part of the problem. It's broken windows policing. It's the fact that, you know, the prison industrial complex, the fact that, you know, look at even Ferguson. 2%, the second number two source of revenue was tickets and fines and court fees and shit. In New York, when they wanted to give de Blasio a big, you know, stick up the butt, what'd they do? They stopped fucking writing those broken windows tickets. They crippled the city from an income perspective. The whole thing's kind of, I'm waiting for a community to be like, yeah, you know what? We don't need policing. We're going to do it differently.
I'm telling you, it's going to happen. I say this all the time.
Shout a big community.
Shout out to Philip Agnew, Dream Defenders. If you hear that brother talk, you will hear some radical ass shit about when he says leaving the grid and being, he thinks like, you know, beyond what the scope of what people normally think. His vision for our future and our people is really radical, but in an amazing way. And I would not put it past him and lots of other people to, you know, these young people have some amazing ideas. They are at a point in their lives where they are no longer going to be held accountable for systems that they do not participate in and do nothing but take advantage of them. And I think that it's going to be a trying time, but I'm also really excited to be here for it, to see what happens and to be involved and to see the strength and resilience of black and brown people and people of color and transgender people and LGBT people, because it's just, it's enough already. It's enough. It's enough.
Should we lighten it up?
Let's lighten it up a bit.
Speaking of poets. I am definitely not black enough for you.
Yes, but as people may know, we have been chronicling our first couple's lame duck blackness as they have turned up a notch or 10 on their blackness in the twilight hours of their time in the White House.
A lot of respect to it. You know, the Clintons did it too. They got like real Arkansas. They got real kind of like, I would say like rednecky, but like
they did.
The last couple of years they were like fucking grilling pig on the fucking lawn and shit.
They steal like everything in the White House.
They did.
They took the curtains.
Well, but
the
so
China.
This week's seminal. POTUS got on Twitter.
Yes.
Twitter. He's got exactly 4 tweets and 2.2 million followers. But
I think he set a new record, they said.
The fastest to a million.
He beat Robert Downey Jr.
Wow.
Which is pretty interesting. And so he had a cool exchange with President Clinton.
With Bill, yeah, he was talking about the handle POTUS, and Bill asked him if it comes with the house, and his response was, good question, anyone interested in FLOTUS?
So you can tweet the president. He also has been blocking fools like nobody's business, which is awesome as well.
That was, who was it, Meninist, right?
Meninist.
Which is like an anti-feminist movement, but Meninist Twitter was like, what the fuck, I've been blocked by the president already. Like, yeah.
Duh, you're an idiot.
I think if he set an account record for the most to a million, the fastest, he had to have set an account record for the most blocks.
Oh, like, no doubt.
I mean, and honestly, like his first tweet was like, hey, it's Barack. You know, it really is. 6 years. They're finally giving me my own account. The responses, man. You know, of course, there's good people. Like, this is nice. Great. Welcome. Twitter is like racist Twitter.
Twitter is bad.
You know, it's like the only thing I've seen worse than racist Twitter is like racist 4chan. You know what I mean? Like anonymous and like worser.
Yeah.
But racist Twitter is ugly. And it came out on POTUS immediately.
I keep my block hand very strong on the Twitter.
Yeah, that team of blocks. He must have been working overtime. Mm-hmm. Block button melted.
Melted. So tomorrow actually is a big day in the Black Lives Matter movement. It is the National Day of Action for Black Women and Girls. I know you guys actually spoke on your show a couple of weeks ago when the announcement about Rekia Boyd's killer being let off on a quote unquote technicality. And the lack of support for women and their plight with both police brutality and racism in this country. So have you guys heard about it? I don't know if you have or hadn't. It's been it was a direct response to the lack of response, I would say, because people were kind of like, wait a second. You know, I just know being in the movement that every organization that I am that I have anything to do with or have worked with have not just women involved, but women founders, women on the front lines, women who are the arbiters and moving this movement forward. So it's disturbing and disappointing when we see black women, trans women not getting the support that they deserve across the board, both in the media attention and outpouring in their communities and just general care for their lives as much as we do.
Can we reference?
That's where it comes from too, is in the mainstream media is when they do talk about the movement or movements around Black Lives Matter, you don't see a lot in the clips that is shown on mainstream media. If you're not on Twitter, if you're not following the movement very closely, you don't see a lot of women at the forefront because that's not what they're putting out there.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about Rekia, and we've talked about Rekia, and it, I don't want to say it should have had as much national prominence as, you know, Tamir or any other, you know, instance.
I would even say more.
More. The circumstances were
The circumstances
deplorable.
Were so heinous. Like, she literally was walking down the street. And she was doing absolutely nothing.
Was he off-duty? Where the cop was off-duty?
He was off-duty.
Shot over his shoulder, out of a vehicle, into a fucking crowd, and only got off. Only got off because they undercharged him.
Yeah. What? Well, for that whole case was hand delivered by the DA.
By the DA,
yeah, for sure.
They delivered that case to them, and that's the. I think when we talked about that, I don't think my wife was so upset about that. Especially not even just from the national media coverage, but more just the way it, like when they have the march in Chicago and hardly anybody showed up for the march, like that just upset her so bad. It's like, you know, why is nobody coming out in full-fledged support for Rekia Boyd or all these other women that are brutalized or killed by the police? And I think that was her biggest issue, was just the community support.
The community support
it
didn't seem
like it
was a lot of people, especially in that community. I think there was more talk about it even outside of that community. And it's the heinous way that she was killed, like really totally innocent person, you know, walking, doing whatever, and he shot into a crowd. Like, that alone should have been the problem.
Should have been
absolutely.
The problem.
What are you doing?
Absolutely. Right. They had, at the end of the March to Justice that Leslie was on, they ended in D.C., and I went to the rally, and they had Rekia's brother and sister at
No,
the,
it was her mom. She couldn't even talk. It was
the brother day,
talked, it was
the
day after the case was thrown out, and they were really raw, like,
but beyond
really
the, what I mean to convey is that the, you know, he was talking about the insult to injury, just the added humiliation, and that he could tell. And these little things, like he comes into the courthouse and they've got all these cops and dogs and all sorts of people. He's like, they're going to fucking let this guy off.
Like he
knew
as soon as he got there, he said he saw the increased police presence and there were dogs there that had never been dogs there before. And he said, holy shit, they're going to let him off. We're going to be the They're gonna try. They set up a scenario with which, the bad people are the people who lost their daughter, who lost their sister, who lost their loved one. Mm-hmm. You know, just trying to flip it around. It's so crazy.
And then they even had the judge is reprimanding the courtroom prior to the reading of it. this is going to be a court decision. I don't want to see emotional outbursts. We're going to compose ourselves. And again, he's like, they're going to let him off. They're going to let him off. Like chiding everybody in the courtroom. You know, you just lost your daughter and we're going to let this killer go free. But damn you, black people better be respectable. Don't get emotional now. It's fucking unbelievable. It's unconscionable.
Yeah. To me, that's been the thing, that being close to meeting so many of these families, doing the work and on the march and everything. Like I met, you know, Jordan Davis's dad, Brandon Tate Brown's mom. Obviously, as you just said, Rakia's mom and brother, and a lot of other families that have lost their loved ones. And the thing that really gets me the most is the way that these families are treated by the system and by the police departments and by the criminal justice system in general. They don't inform them about anything. Most of the time, they don't even hear that their child has been injured or killed until they see it on the news or they hear on the radio. You know, I've never heard of that ever happening with a white child or a white person. No. That they just get killed and everybody knows about it. And by the time that their parent or loved one is even notified, their criminal record has been released to the press already. I mean, this is what's going on. It's deplorable. It's disgusting. Well, tomorrow, 19 cities have answered the call for the National Day of Action for Black Women and Girls. And you can go to FergusonResponse.tumblr.com to see all list of all of them. But it's Nashville, Denver, Baltimore, Louisville, Austin, Minneapolis, New Orleans, Chicago, Miami, Philadelphia, Charlotte, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Lexington, Kentucky, New York City, which also had a Say Her Name event tonight in Union Square. It's going on right now, actually. Columbus, Ohio, Asheville, North Carolina, Tulsa, Indianapolis, and Seattle will all be holding events specifically to highlight the plight of Black women and girls in the Black Lives Matter movement and in the world today. So hopefully
you're here.
People, if you're in any of those cities, please try and go. They all over. And again, FergusonResponse.tumblr.com to check that out. Yes. So I'm happy to see that this was a reaction to that. And I hope for really strong turnouts in all of these actions. I really want to see a strong turnout. And I want to see a lot of men at these actions. That's what I want to see. So I'm hoping that's what happened.
That definitely for me is really important, is that our men definitely come out and show support.
Mm-hmm. Right on. I don't know if there's a good segue into this next news piece, but white people, stop calling the cops on black people. It's not illegal to be black.
Talk to them, Drew. Gather your people, please.
All I can do is relate. But so cops, even cops now, are complaining on an online cop talk forum that people are calling 911 too much about black people being black. So being black in America. One got called to a fishing pond community, and right away guy comes up and says, let me guess, one of my racist ass neighbors called and said I didn't live here. Right? Again, got another call for two black males, and they were jump starting a vehicle at 9:30 in the morning. That was it. Jump starting a car, call the cops. And they had the one woman chimed in, said they were the dispatch operator, and they would frequently get people calling saying, well, this person looks suspicious, this or that. And they would ask, well, what's suspicious? And they'd say, he's black or Muslim looking. And they said that they would sometimes reply, it's not illegal to be black or Muslim looking or whatever.
Yeah, it's not.
But, I mean, and we're making light of this. We're making jokes. But and I can you look his name up? I want to say the fucker that killed John Crawford, because, yes, the cops pulled the trigger, but the person in that Walmart that called 911,
Ronald Ritchie,
you are a murderer, Ronald Ritchie. You called the police on a man in a Walmart, and you stood on the phone and made all these claims. He's pointing the gun at people. He's loading it. Just absolute. Your implicit bias and your racism. It killed John Crawford. And somebody called on Tamir, and even, you know, to, I would say, their almost credit, they attempted to tell 911 it's probably a toy. But still, had you not even bothered to fucking call, it's very likely that both of those individuals would be alive today. And countless other people, white people, stop calling the police. In fact, again, this isn't even joking, I have black family. We're having a party this weekend. It's Memorial Day. There's going to be a lot of people here. I have previously told my neighbors in the beginning, like 4 years ago, like, hey, I've got a lot of black family coming. Don't freak out. Like, seriously, like, you know, there's going to be about 24 black folk in the neighborhood.
Yeah, because you never know. My nephew be walking the dog, and next thing you know, you hear a cop car come down the
street. For real.
It's ridiculous.
Isn't that crazy you have to do that? Isn't that crazy you have to do that?
It's shameful.
It's terrible.
It's shameful.
It's terrible. It's really terrible. You know, there's so many things that go along with that. We're selling our house here. And I said to Drew, I said, I'd prefer the owner, not the anybody that's coming through the house. I don't want them to know that you are married to a black person.
They still don't.
Right now, they're buying our house in 20 days. They have no idea that I am a black woman that they're buying this house from.
Surprise!
Because there's actually a tax, and black people get lower offers, and they are not able to sell their houses for market value. This has been tested and shown in many a market. And I went around my house and pulled down pictures of myself and my family to show my house off. Because I had to be concerned for the financial health of my family, and I'm literally like making myself non-existent in my home to do that.
Yeah, and that's implicit bias to the core. There's the assumptive is a black individual does not and cannot, for whatever reason, take care of this home in the way that I would want to. So it has an implication now. You know, you call it a black tax, but it is. There's a penalty selling your house while black.
I mean, Drew, how was that for you? I would like to know your perspective on it. How was that for you? Like, I've listened to your guys' show, and you seem to kind of lean more towards the black side of things. Do you get a lot of backlash from white people for stuff like that?
I don't know.
Your views on...
I guess there's two questions there. So, like, the thing about selling your house while black, and, you know, we've been married long enough, and I'm aware enough that if Leslie says, hey, this is a thing, and, you know, I think we should be aware of this, you know, I'm not going to question her. Say, oh, my God. And she even had, you know, articles and reference, like, look, you know, the selling a house while black, it's real. We need to think about it. So it's there's definitely a lot of duality. On the one hand, it's heartbreaking. You know, it's just like, fuck, I can't believe I'm, you know, agreeing, and we're going to sit here and de-blackify and wipe my wife's existence from a home in order to sell it. So it is. It's like, it's disgusting. It's heartbreaking. But then there's like a pragmatic and realistic, like, you know, it is heartbreaking and it's disgusting, but it's also the way our world is working today. And as much as I want it to be different, it's not. And I can't afford to have us lose money on the house to get less than the house is worth. Like, that's just like, you do things, you paint a house, you trim it, and you get all the, you know, professional landscaping, and you know, you fix the toilet, and you do some things that, like, okay, I want to show the house as much as I can, give it as much appeal as I can. And it fucking kills me that part of that is taking my wife's pictures and pictures of us out of the home. But it's like, you kind of have to do it. So it's weird. It's an odd duality. I don't like it. I'm not comfortable, but I'm pragmatic and realistic in that it's got to get done. And then in terms of like flack from white people, you know, it's been a little bit, I'm still navigating that course. Cause I guess I've been very aware. And I would say prior to Mike Brown's extrajudicial execution, I was pretty apathetic. Just kind of like, it's a huge problem. I'm not overly, you know, I know that I inherently support supremacy by just being white and male and getting up in the morning. Like, that's just going to happen. And I always felt like, well, I'm not out of my way supporting it, and I'm doing, you know, as best I can, but I'm not active in my, was that a cartoon? What's playing here? I'm not active in my, I'm not vociferous in my talking about supremacy and talking about race and so forth. And it definitely rubbed some people. It surprised me that it rubbed him kind of the wrong way. I'm sure there's a lot of friends that are like, oh, fuck, Drew, enough of it. Come on, keep talking about something else. You know, Jesus. Even like some of, and I, my very close friends that are in Michigan were moving, I kind of preface and say, hey, listen, you know, this is who I am now, and this is how we're talking about. And to his credit, my one friend's like, dude, just don't take the word retard away from me, please. Can I keep saying that? and I'm like making jokes, and I don't use the word myself, but I'm like, okay, I'll let you have that. But, I've been fortunate that my family, my mom and my brothers are terrific. That's a credit to my mom and how she raised all of us, that, you know, she's very active in wanting to, she goes to marches, she's, you know, writes letters, she's in on the calls for the surge group. My older brother's having conversations with his all white daughters about, black lives, and, you know, at the dinner table. We had Thanksgiving here, and we had a you know, prolonged discussion about it. So I'm really blessed that my inner circle, very close to me, they're all very understanding. Even my employer, you know, we had like a 2-hour conversation where he grilled me about stuff and was asking me. But in general, I felt very comfortable and that I'm okay and I'm not worried about my employment. I'm not worried about my relationships. So if people on Twitter are like, "Yeah, you're blah 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 blah. You're not even white. You blah blah blah." Like, this doesn't even bother me. It's like whatever, fuck it. You know, it just really just water off a duck's back. But there's been a couple. There was one relationship that recently it kind of surprised me, and I'm not like mourning over it, but I'm. It was a, you know, we're talking a 20-year relationship. Someone that I've been close to, but we've had periods in our life where we've, you know, not been close for, you know, a couple of years and we kind of come back and forth. But, you know, like did the whole unfriend on Facebook and won't return my calls. And it was kind of weird. So I'm not like struggling with that, but it caught me off guard. I was like, whoa, I can't believe that person. Is it because of my stance on Black Lives? Is it? I'm not sure. I don't know. But that one surprised me. But other than that, there hasn't been any that I've really been pissed.
I think you forgot about church.
Church. We left church. That's actually probably been the biggest loss.
Yeah, that has been the biggest loss for sure. We had to leave our church, which was really difficult. It still is difficult, actually.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I literally cried. I was home alone, and Leslie had already left church, and I had tried to stick it out, and was trying, and I felt in my mind, if I'm going to be active in this work, and I want to do this kind of work, and just, you know, talk to people about this stuff, I have to be able to move people that know me personally, that have a connection to me, that love me, I've been in a relationship with, we have this bond, we're in the same church group together, or church community together. And I felt like, well, if I can't be effective here, where can I be effective at all? Despite that it's a small, you know, 350 congregation church. But when I finally was like, okay, this just isn't, you know, I have to walk away from my own health. This is no longer tenable. It's not viable for me. It was sad. I literally cried. I was like, man, you know.
Was it an issue with your stance on stuff, or just like what was the big issue?
It's all white. You know, there's literally no Black people. You know, it's very white. It's a UU, which is Unitarian Universalism, and UUs as a faith are struggling. We're very behind the curve when it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement. We prefer to think of ourselves as good people, and we like to think of ourselves as doing, you know, good, but we don't actually act on it. So it's tough. It's been tough. And as a faith, it's got the foundation are 7 principles. And the first one is, I believe in the inherent dignity and worth of all people. That's it. Full stop. Wow. And it's succinct and it's powerful and it speaks to me. And it bothers me that if that's our first principle, how can we not be fighting for Black liberation with every ounce of our breath? And when I say, you know, that's my expectation, I would have been happy with, you know, some acknowledgement. What I got was, I'm sick of talking about race and racism. Mm. You know, I mean, literally, like
verbatim. I'm sorry, I want to say that was actually said out loud in front of the entire congregation. Just what? To be clear, that someone felt the need to actually say those words. This was after I had already left, but Drew was in the room, and I had, you know, the thing is, and I say this to Drew all the time, is that he gives white people entirely too much credit, and I say it to him because he's continually disappointed in stuff that's going to happen, but being Black, I'm like, no, white people are fucked up, and they'll do fucked up shit all the time, and so I said to him, he was like, I'm going to keep going, I'm going to go to this thing, and I said, Just steal yourself, because you haven't been hurt like this, and it's going to be somebody's going to say some real left shit to you, and you're going to be hurt because that's how white people do. And then it happened, and you were like, I can't believe it. You prepared me, and I still was completely blindsided by it because.
Yeah, especially if it's in church.
Yes.
I'll say that's been a big change. I go to these things, like the follow-up thing I went to, I was like on the balls of my feet, like, come on, motherfucker. I wish a motherfucker would say some shit right now. Ooh. Like, I came on like 30. I was just like, ooh. Come with the racist shit now. God damn it. Let's go.
Oh my
it's
gosh.
Funny because my brother-in-law is white. My sister married a white guy, and he just has his view of the world. Like, me and him had a long talk the other day because I was posting stuff on my Facebook page, and he goes to my sister and he says, you know, why is your brother always posting stuff about black people? And like, he just doesn't understand why. He was like, I just don't think race matters. Like, I'm just one of those white people. I don't see race. And I'm thinking, in your world, maybe, but in my world, I have to deal with this kind of stuff. And after I had a long talk with him, he's just like, you know, I've got black friends and all of this. Hell, I married a black woman. He was like, I just don't understand why everybody's so caught up in this race thing. And it kind of shocked me that he said that. But the more I listened to him, he's just, you know, he literally, oblivious. I talked to him, you're just kind of oblivious to everything.
Is he under 30? You know, how old is he?
No, he's 42.
He's 42. Ooh, wow. See, I used to be him. That was me before I met Leslie in my 20s. If you ever want to do your sister a solid, connect me with this guy and I'll talk to him. I'm serious. Well, I swear to God. I'm serious.
Well, Drew gets looped in a lot. He's on, what do you guys call it, Drew? What is it called?
Send racist to us. But I'm not saying your brother-in-law's racist. Yeah.
No, but he does. I wouldn't say they send like blatant racist. Usually it's people that are like, they're just... they're on this wavelength of like, uninformed. Oh, I don't see color, or that, you know, they're coming at it from a place that's like not really, you know, just centering whiteness and not really taking into consideration that they are doing that in the conversation. And then, you know, Drew will get looped in, and you talk to people, usually just DM them one-on-one. It's not public or anything, but you're very good at it. Talking to these people.
So you said that I give white people way too much credit, and Chris Crass on the FRM podcast articulated this in a way better than I have been able to, but you know, I usually say, well, I have white friends, my mother, my brother, like I don't hate white people. I'm not against white people. But when it comes to a white person saying something really ignorant and stupid, I really advocate strenuously for the fact that as a white person doing this work, I'm going to fuck up and I need to be prepared for it. And when I know better, I do better. And it's disingenuous for me to then, when somebody else fucks up, to be like, nope, you're horrible. Let's shame you and hang you out to dry and like blah, 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 blah. And, you know,
that's my job. I do that.
I understand. But to some degree, you know, my goal, you know, is to help folks like that. I want more white people to be further along on the journey of understanding our history, the nature of supremacy, the impact it has on everybody. Obviously, you know, really heavy toll on black people, but it's got an impact on white people too. And it's like living a disingenuous life. And I want to help people move along that journey. And I'm not going to do it. And Chris said it this way. You can't want to help and work with people and hate them at the same time. This is not going to happen. It's going to come from a place of love. And so I've taken that to heart. You know, I don't hate people. I hate supremacy. I hate whiteness. You know, I hate centering, you know, a lot of the bullshit we do, like my t-shirt, right? You know, even white people are sick of white people's bullshit. Like, I'm sick of the bullshit. And let's be honest and let's talk about it. Let's be real. You know, let's not have some fucking like pretend like I don't see color. You know, we're in a post-racial society because Obama was elected. Like, do you realize, like, yeah, okay, Obama got elected, but then the Tea Party came alive. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not willing to have bullshit conversations.
One of the things that struck me when Michelle Obama did her commencement speech in Tuskegee, I heard people on Fox News and Glenn Beck saying, you know, that commencement speech set people back to the 60s. And it was like, well, you got a black president. So it's funny to me that a lot of white people feel like, oh, because we have a black president, that everything else is like null and void.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? One individual has, through, you know, tremendous effort and circumstances, managed to raise to the level of presidency. And like, oh, that's it. It's over now. 400 years of oppression.
Good, y'all.
Wash your hands. Yay.
We ready.
We made it. Now. We got there.
We got a relaxer in the White House, and that's all we needed to have happen.
We gave you the White House. Now shut up.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Kim. That's exactly right. Aren't you black people happy?
Yes.
You got the presidency. Come on.
Speaking of things that white people don't understand very well, one of the things I found very difficult to explain to white people, even, you know, I wouldn't say enlightened, but even white people that are for Black Lives Matter and understand the importance of the need for that to be a movement, there is sometimes a disconnect with the need to create black spaces. And that's something I think has been important in the movement, because obviously you can't say the same things that you can in mixed company that you might be able to say. There are issues and conversations that Black people need to have with each
affinity
other
groups, sure.
And build and just do this work together. So one of the things that has come out of the movement, I'm really excited, is the Movement for Black Lives National Convening, which is happening July 24th through 26th in Cleveland, Ohio. You can go and just search the Movement for Black Lives.org or m4bl.org to check it out. It's brought to it's sponsored by a ton of amazing organizations: Black Lives Matter, the Black Youth Project, Ferguson Action, Cleveland Action, the Ohio Student Association, Organization for a Black Struggle, the Million Hoodies Movement, Ferguson Response Network as well. So it's going to be really amazing. It's just in the early stages, but you can pre-register now and you can get more information about that. And it's also on the Ferguson Response website. Have you guys done, I know you guys were in Baltimore the other day. How have you been connecting with the movement? And have you found it to be something easy to do, something not so easy to do? And are your kids, how are they kind of dealing with being that age in this, you know, turbulent but historic times?
Yeah, I think being here in the Baltimore area, we live like 12 minutes outside of the city. And because it was so close, for us, it was easy for us to get involved and to be in the loop with everything that was going on in our area. It's been super easy to be online on Twitter, and social networking has made it really easy to see what's going on in other places. As far as our kids go, you know, our 10-year-old, we explain it to her so she understands. She's a very, very, very super sensitive kid, so you know, it really hurts her heart to see things like this and to hear about it. But we do talk about it a lot. Our older ones, the 13-year-old and 16-year-old, they are well aware of what's going on and welcome getting involved, which is awesome. You know, to be able to sit there and have conversations and get their feedback and understand how they're feeling during this time. When I had my older daughter, Taylor, she was born on September 10th, 2000. And I thought her life will never be the same, or she would never understand life as I knew it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's tough on them, you know, when she's sitting there talking about it and how they talk about it in school, and a lot of the things they watch CNN in school. And sometimes when she comes home, we have to deprogram her from what she has seen in the national media and what her teachers are talking about, because they don't even get it. A lot of the white teachers especially, they don't even get what's going on, and they kind of whitewash it and make it seem like, but this is happening, but we have a Black president, so everything should be fine. And my daughter comes home like, but Mom, it's not fine. Why do they keep saying it's fine? So it's interesting to see what is being talked about in the school system and what we have to, the deprogramming we have to do when they come home.
And the school, if I was a parent, I'm not saying you should do this. If I was a parent of a child of color, I might even try to homeschool, just because the education system is one of the most, as an institution, it is just top to bottom has issues with supremacy, from the textbooks to the school board to the teachers to the way that they teach to the teaching to the test, all kinds of just stuff that disadvantage children of color
and
in
just
the
way that
system.
They're made to feel. Like, that's my whole thing, is that there is a disconnect between that supremacy seeped into our educational system means that our children are taught to think of themselves in a different way, and
right.
also to think of aspiring to whiteness as the way to be, which yeah. is the other problem that I think is really yeah. concerning. And I speak on this from my own perspective and how I've lived my life. And when I look back on how I was educated, and I was very well educated, but I also see where the things that I valued during that time was because I thought if I was more closer to white, if I acted this certain yes. way, if I distanced myself from that which was seen as other or Black or whatever, that I would be better off. Yes. And that is where because it messes with your mind, your entire personage, just to have that thought in your head that what you are is wrong.
Yes.
And so you should try not to be that is incredibly damaging. And it's violence. It's violence against our people. It's violence against our children. It's violence against society. And that is where I feel like white people need to be woken up in terms of the damage it does to our collective society, not just to black people, but it affects white people too, because there's going to be a reckoning, because this movement is not going to stop. And the biggest reckoning is going to be especially white men actually understanding the fact that they are really probably the least impressive people on the planet Earth.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's going to be a difficult transition for them to make, because since they take their first breath, they are fed, you're exceptional. You can achieve anything. You can do anything. You're the best. And to wake up, it's like an alternative reality. It's like the Matrix. And it's like everything they've been taught about themselves is pure bullshit. Mm-hmm. And so the sooner this happens, the better off for everybody, because it's going to happen. And I worry about the schools, but I do think, you know, when Kim mentioned social media, I think it's really such a powerful tool for our young people, because they're able to push back. They're able to research. They're able to say, yeah, that doesn't sound like that makes any sense. And I find myself checking myself all the time. I used to have these ridiculous ideas about the Nation of Islam, for example. And I had to sit down and say to myself, why do I have that feeling about them? Why do I think that? Because I was fed it, and it's bullshit.
Programmed. You know, I felt that way. Then that's how, you know, anything from going to school or getting a job or having a career, like, you know, I remember growing up and I had a really good education and we were just force fed, you know, you want to get this type of job, you want to be in this corporation, you want to do this, and you want to be just like the white person, and you have to get so you can get to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a rude awakening when I was working for a national nonprofit. I became their first African-American vice president, and we were sitting at a board of directors meeting. It was myself, and then we another black woman became a vice president as well, so it was two of us, and we were talking about diversity amongst the nonprofit nationally, and one of the board members stood up and says, well, I think we've met our quota, so we don't need to talk about it anymore.
Ooh.
And I literally had to get up out and come remove myself, because it was about to get real black. I was just astonished that he said that. I had to collect myself and then come back in and continue with my points about diversity and, you know, knock him down, you know, because they only understand power and money. And I had to bring myself to that level. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I cannot believe, and this is what I aspire to, mm-hmm. to be here? What? No, I'm done. And I left.
Good like, for you.
I'm not doing this. And I don't teach our girls that. Like, their aspirations is not to go and work at a corporation and do this and be that, be what they want you to be. No, be what you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No matter what it is. And you don't have to aspire to be like them.
I spoke on about the black guy who tips, but I literally got a job handed to me, waiting tables, right? I'm like waiting tables, and dude's like, hey, come work for me, pay you $40,000 a year. And you know, it was crazy. Because I'm white, just because I'm a white dude.
Literally,
not even lying. Not listen, even lying. $40,000 a year jobs happened. Fall out of the sky.
He was just waiting on the, he's not, like, oh, I like the way you talk to my dad.
Not even kidding.
Here, let me give you a job.
It was in commercial real estate, and it was a big old, like, muckety muck company. They ran the Wrigley building, they owned a bunch of properties downtown, and it was maybe a year and a bit that I did it. The just like old boy, like golf club, like, you know, shake of the hand, it's all about who you know kind of stuff. It was so not what I wanted to do. And I can tell you the day, and it's really, I haven't told the story on this podcast. It's good. I'm working with this guy, and I'm trying to be like his mentee. He's mentoring me, and he's talking about, you know, we're in the commercial real estate business and how we do it. So there was a property that was for sale, and it was like a waste management, like huge, you know, multi tens of millions of dollar property. And there was somebody that needed some large property, and they talked at some point. So he goes, oh, let's go visit this guy, and we'll, you know, let him know about waste management. So he walked his office, and it's all polite, and it's like, you know, hey, how you doing? How's the wife? And oh, you know, oh, great. I'm see you here. And what about the kids? Blah, 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 blah. What about this waste management? Guy on the other side of the table goes, we're building this client their own property, and we've already broke ground. Okay, so like, if you know anything about like real estate development, like I mention property A to you and you tell me like, oh, we're building this client, a building from spec, high profit for us, and we've dug a hole in the ground already. It's moving fucking forward, right? It's done. But here comes the guy that's mentoring me. Oh, but you got to look at this, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. And he kind of was being like, you know, like his sales approach, I guess, is one that I do not take. And at the end of it, the guy was just like, shut the fuck up. I don't want to fucking hear about this fucking waste management building. Shut the fuck up. So are the kids going to go to baseball next Tuesday? And it was like, I remember I came home and I told Leslie, I was like, I can't believe I witnessed that. It was so awkward and uncomfortable. And he just was like a light switch, like, nah, no big deal. Let's go back and, you know, we'll do this or that. And I said, if that's what it takes, if that's what, like, if that's like you, Kim, if this is what I'm aspiring to, I'm out. I just mentally, I quit that day. I was like, no way. And he was miserable. He was fucking miserable.
Yeah,
he straight commission. He probably made $250,000 a year. Has the University of Chicago MBA, but just miserable. Fucking miserable. Mm-mm-mm. You couldn't have paid me to have his life.
Wow.
Yeah. That guy was bad. Drew used to be so mean to him. he liked to make him feel like as uncomfortable as possible. And so for
my,
a white
my comedy is I relish in that like weird like I just made you like That's me.
Only with like white, especially with older race, white with dudes race, with race. He likes to make white people feel super uncomfortable with regard to race. So he would like they'd carpool into the office or something and he'd go by the house and he'd say, oh, hey, you know, do you want some coffee? He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, well, how do you take it? He's like, oh, like my women, black and bitter.
And for real.
And Jay
like,
was like,
I'd stare at him for like 30 seconds. He's like, am I supposed to laugh? Is that a joke? You just said something about black women being angry and bitter. Is that funny? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
Priceless.
So funny.
Yeah, our school system definitely needs some work, though. I mean, hell, they're still teaching kids Columbus discovered America.
For real. And thank you for bringing it back, Michael. We had gotten really far off track.
We did. We went right off track, didn't we? That happens when you're having fun. Speaking of fun. And R&B jams of the 90s. One of my favorite topics.
I'm going to turn my mic down because I got nothing here.
You have nothing? Just turn it off, babe. It's all good.
Drew, you know about the 90 jams.
Knows about the 90 jams.
I do.
Drew was more of a gangster rap fan, though.
Shh.
What?
Don't get him started. Please.
A little NWA for you, Drew.
Oh, my God. I fucking love Cube, NWA, Ice-T.
Yeah, don't put Ice-T on in front of him, period. He knows, like, all the words to every ice. It's ridiculous. It's
power.
Absurd. Absurdity. But I did find the 10 best R&B summer jams of the 90s, and I thought we could revisit them. Mm-hmm. Now, this first one, I don't remember it, so I'm going to play it and see maybe if I do remember it. I don't know. Let's see. It's called Lighter Shade of Brown.
This is really big in California.
I remember this song.
It's coming a little hot.
In the park on a Sunday afternoon, me and the crew just jamming the oldie tune, sipping on a cold bottle of brewski. Gave over a swig, he passed it back to me. Right about then, up came some of the homies: Micah, Eli, PJ, Smooth, Phil, and Larry. Busted out the ice chest, Phil popped the cooler. Eli and Pete drunk brew, nothing better to do. Micah's cup, yo, was filled with bird. J Smooth had a cold glass too, you know it. Word, girls at the picnic bench preparing the food. The sky was clear and the weather was cool. Kids at the playground playing on the merry-go-rounds. All the cars cruising, bumping their funky sound.
Boy, this is very California.
Fun day. Back to business as usual come Monday. At the park, everything went real smooth. On a Sunday afternoon.
We were chilling in the park.
This is definitely a summer R&B.
Oh, yeah. This girl's wearing a tie-dye denim skort jumpsuit.
Yeah.
The best. Nice, nice. Now, this next tune comes out of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put one of my very close friends, one Tia Mar, on blast. We were having a light discussion one day about what's the best rap song in the history of rap songs.
We're talking like, you know.
Ever.
Right.
History.
Fight the Power. Like ever. People are like, you know.
You know.
Curtis Blow.
Out.
Yeah.
All sorts. The Message. You know. Absolutely. People going there. Whatever they want to say.
Here come Tia.
Jesus Walks. Whatever. This
just,
was.
Just play
this
Tia's song. This is Tia's selection.
Tia's selection for the best rap song ever.
I might take her black card away.
Drums, please.
Although I fucking love this song, ain't gonna lie.
It's a great song. It's not the best rap song ever, though.
Nothing Will Smith did is the greatest ever.
He bagged Jada. That's the best thing ever.
I'll give him that.
Just saying. Hey, Jada.
Here it is. A cool, slightly transformed. Just a bit of a break from the norm.
Plus, this is all Philly.
So Philly. That hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix. And if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. I remember this video because one of these girls in this video had this short haircut, but she had like it was like all bangs. And I was determined to get that haircut. I was like, no, it's got to look like that girl from the Summertime video.
I seen that graduation picture with you. With
yes, I love
it. You know, we're making fun of Tia. Every time we make fun of this, I'm like, hey, greatest rap song ever. Drums, please.
Drums,
please.
Yes. Have you guys spent any time in Philly at all?
Yeah.
I've never been to Philly.
I have. All the time. Lots of time.
Excellent.
Never been there once.
Super close.
Mike, did you grow up in Waukegan?
No. I'm originally from Bakersfield, California.
Okay. I thought you said your mom was a...
Yeah. We ended up moving to Chicago after my mother and father divorced in the early 80s, and we ended up moving to Waukegan because my mom's side of the family is there. So we lived there for about 3 years or so, and then we end up coming back to California.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What period of time? In the 90s and the 80s?
No. That was in the 80s. We were in Waukegan from like 82 to 85, I believe.
Okay. I grew up around that area on the north suburbs, Winnetka, a sundown town.
Yes. Okay.
Mm. Yeah. You probably heard of New Trier.
I went back a couple of years ago. That was my first time there since we had left, and it was like, oh, God. it was crazy.
It's changed a lot.
Yeah. Philly's interesting because I feel like Philly, the city, and also people from Philly have this inferiority complex. They have problems.
Oh, there's a chip. There's a chip.
And it makes me laugh. So I love people from Philly for that.
I do love Jill Scott, who is from Philly.
And I'm just telling anybody listening right now, do not ever get involved with a short dude from Philly. You will have like problems upon problems upon problems. They have like insecurities of insecurities with some extra insecurities. So just letting all the women out there, all single ladies, short dudes from Philly, stay away. This next song is a good one. A lot of white people like this song too, I've noticed. This one.
I'll let you know.
You'll know it.
Please.
This video has this chick in a bikini fake playing this saxophone. It's so awesome. Bad.
I'm shaking.
They must have taped this at Freaknik or something. Two, three, four. Teddy Riley.
This was a staple at like high school and college dances.
Yeah,
and
that's why. White people like this song.
They did.
This was Freaknik Atlanta all
yes day. Yes, that's what I said. They must have taped this video at Freaknik.
Was it Rex and Effects? Who was
yes
the,
it was Rex was and
that,
Effects
is that Pharrell
proving my point that white people love this song.
And was Pharrell involved? Was he a producer for them or something?
I don't know if he was. That's a good question.
I think he was
up. He might have been Teddy Riley was the producer on that. He of Guy fame, one of the greatest guy groups ever. Love Guy. Jam. Oh, jam. All right. the next one. Oh, gosh.
This.
Here we go. Miami. Oh, my God.
No. You should just stop. This is R&B? This is R&B?
Yeah. The 90s were a weird time in R&B, I have to say. It was a very strange moment.
Sorry to go back, but Pharrell did write Teddy Riley's verse for Rum Shaker.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Ghost writing for
Teddy Riley. That shows you how much white people like that. I knew that. I know nothing.
And you knew Pharrell. And I knew that.
I knew fucking nothing. I know nothing.
In fact, hip hop secret that Rakim actually wrote Summertime.
Oh.
See, but after my last piece, I'm going to do like Costanza and be like, I'm out.
You're out. That's it. You drop that and that's it.
Drop the mic.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's really cool. So, of course, you can't do a 90s anything without Coolio's involvement somehow. Mm-mm.
Who this?
Yo, it's Spoon. Let's go up to the beach, man, and catch some females and have a barbecue.
How we gonna get there? We ain't got no car! Fool.
This song is only good because the sample is so good.
Yeah.
But I also remember that older black people liked that song because they liked the sample and it was so heavily featured that it was like, okay, they could deal with it.
I just wanted to get rid of those braids.
Oh, those braids were struggle braids. The struggle braids. It's not cute.
If you have seen him lately, he's bald now, but he still has the two braids on the side.
It's like Stevie Wonder be
holding
doing that.
Holding on for dear life.
He's got those two braids
those
are struggling.
Two braids. They just
they're
trying
cling
to
it on.
They're going to stay there.
The braid struggle is real.
This next song is actually good, but the best part about it, I don't even think is in this version, which is the ODB rap of it, because... Yeah, but it's a good song. Oh, it is his. Mm-mm. Another great sample. Tom Tom Club, Genius to Love is so good. Mm-mm. A good song. All right, Mariah.
I preferred his Big Baby Jesus.
Oh, I bet you did. I bet you did. Fun fact about this fantasy video, it was filmed at Rye Playland in New York, and Mariah Carey's original, like, not really demo, but she recorded herself singing and, like, stuck it in Tommy Mottola's face at some party, was recorded in the, like, you can sing a song in here booth at Rye Playland.
Good for her.
Yeah, it was on a cassette. Back then, if people remember those,
The young kids have no idea what a cassette is.
None at all. Have you guys watched those videos? They have kids like looking at weird things, like a Game Boy, and they're like, "What is this?"
Show talk all about that at the end. Just stuff that these kids have no idea.
None.
Like they don't know what a Blockbuster video is.
Nope.
For real.
We were just talking about that the other day.
Renting videos.
Renting a video.
They have a commercial where the kid's looking at a rotary phone. And he's like, how come it's got the Twitter thing on it?
Oh, well, Tupac, of course, had to.
The same one where they had the VCR and the kid didn't know how to put the tape.
Yes, he was completely baffled by the entire concept of it. What do you mean a tape? What's that?
We had a top loading VCR with a wired remote. had like a 30-foot cord.
I made a call to somewhere and it said press pound. And I remember my 10-year-old like, what is pound? And I showed it to her. She's like, that's hashtag.
It's true. And just even the like the text language, which is, you know, all of those shortcuts that they say and all of that kind of stuff.
TTYLBRB.
Yeah, all those things. It's funny to me. Well, here comes Tupac, of course.
Yeah.
I'm fast forwarding Chris Rock. Chris.
The skit that leads everyone to his song.
Honestly, it's so long. So long. Come on now.
California.
Jeez. That's a minute and 20 seconds into this video. Dr. Dre be spending some money, I know that.
This is back when they had $1 million video budgets and shit. Yeah, the video for this was like Thunderdome.
They used to make TV shows about the making of the video back in the day. That's true.
Compton.
Now let me welcome everybody to the Wild Wild West, a state that's untouchable like Elliot Ness. The track hits your eardrum like a slug to your chest. Back a vest for your Jimmy in the city of sex. We in that sunshine state where the bomb ass him be. The state where you never find a dance floor empty and pimps be on a mission for them greens. Lean me money making machines serving fiends. I've been in the game. Honeys was wearing Sassoon. Now it's 95 and they clock me and watch me diamond shining, looking like a Rob Liberace. It's all good from Diego to the Bay. Your city is the bomb if your city making pain. Throw up a finger if you feel the same way. Straight putting it down for California. Yeah.
I love Dre.
That was when the East Coast West Coast beef was
there.
Ooh, it was tough.
That's back before Dre could bench press 400 pounds.
Yeah, and back before his bank account slowed.
Yeah,
too.
Before Beats, yo.
Good Lord. We never gonna get that what is it? What the
NWA movie?
No, The Remedy. What's the name of his album he's supposed to be coming out with forever and a day?
What's it? Detox.
Detox and The Remedy. Detox. Listen to me.
That would be the album after.
That's right. It's The Remedy. Yeah, Detox. I blame Beats. We're never going to see that album now. He has no incentive whatsoever to ever put that album out. Nah. Which is terrible.
Especially now the NWA movie's coming out. Now they're talking about a big soundtrack.
Yeah, the video. Yeah. Oh, the movie, I mean.
They're
going
to do a tour, I bet.
They're going to do something.
They're going to milk it. I would.
Yeah, I'm sure you would, Drew, for sure.
Vitamin Wire, try it.
So this next song, funnily enough, reminds me of Kappas, because I don't know if this was everybody's experience, but when I was in college, whenever this song came on, all the Kappas decided to grab their canes and get to stepping. So here we go.
Oh, it's got a clap beat.
Video is so 90s. It's insane. They're wearing leather suits, you guys.
Return of the Man.
Where is he now?
Nowhere. I don't know where Mark Morrison is. He's British, too, which is a rarity in summertime R&B hits. That was the 1997 R&B hit. Also sampled Tom Tom Club's Genius of Love. Drew, this next song is like one of your favorite songs ever in the history of songs ever.
A lot of this, like California, like I guess that's R&B, but I feel like it was like rap or hip hop or even pop. Even that last song, like, yes, it's R&B, but it was on the top of the charts, pop charts.
Yeah, but this is the biggest R&B songs from each of these years of the 90s. So, yeah. But Drew, this next song literally is one of your favorite songs. It's not Peaches and Cream. It's a different one.
I love Peaches.
Because please don't put that on in front of him.
Mm-hmm. and get the party started, Drew.
Yeah. Another skit.
Yeah.
Damn skits.
Mini movies.
Mini movies.
Yeah. Come on.
Nice. Yes.
Drew, are you dancing over there?
Fuck yeah.
Come on. Don't stop now. You done did it.
This song is so dirty. I had no clue. Like, you, people were like middle school singing it.
You know what you're doing.
You know it.
You're making it hard. That poke's gonna come through.
That's so funny. My sister and I would be in the car with my mother during this time and make her turn the radio down.
Of course, because come on.
Like, you can't hear that, Mom. And then we would hear her listening to it, and she's tuning out the words and all the speed and didn't get it. And we'd be like, Mom, listen. She'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys were listening to that.
Oh, so funny. Coming
through. But it's a little poke.
Oh, just a little, it's a little poke.
I know you felt it.
Boo, you know I can't help it.
Ooh, I can't help it. You know what I want to do.
All right, Joe, calm down. Take it easy. Calm
so
down.
Basically getting a lap dance, right?
Literally. And that was the, like, that was the dance move then. It was a lot of grinding. It was a lot of just general pretending to have sex while you were dancing action going on.
It was a, that was a really good song.
Yes, because, oh God.
One fucking peaches and cream though, goddammit. 112, my shit. I wish this song were like 32 minutes just to fuck to, for real. Let me tell you what I want to do. Let me show you that I feel you. Wanna freak, wanna ride with you. Wanna kiss when I put my lips all over you. Can't get enough of you. Always thinking of you. So sweet, I can't forget. So good, girl, you make me sweat. What I'm talking about, peaches and cream.
You like this song entirely too much. Know what I
mean? Peach and cream. Oh, fuck yeah, dude. That's my shit. That is my shit. I love 112. I can't lie.
That dude was on our list of people that really couldn't sing.
Yes, Slim, yes. He's on that list. People say can sing, but really, he can't sing.
Yeah. He always had the sick beats, though. The 808, they really, the you know, he didn't have to sing.
That's true. I don't know what they had. They had something, though. But remember, I actually have a 112 story. They came into a restaurant that I was managing one time, and one of the girls was, like, freaking out. I was like, yeah, but it's just 112. And this wasn't when they were hot. It was, like, you know, on their way down, if you know what I mean. And I just was like, okay, but just 112. She's like, no, can I get off? I'm going to go out with them. And she was, like, determined to go and hook up with them.
Bust down.
Definitely bust down behavior. I'll definitely agree with you on that one.
I got to go with them. They're going to hang out with me. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So 1999 gave us not just one of the best summer R&B jams of the 90s, but probably one of the best R&B songs maybe in history. Oh, wait a second.
Commercial first?
No, the video doesn't exist. Now I have to look it up some other way. Gosh darn it.
They did. Okay, hold on. We got something for that.
Nope. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Yeah.
Fucking thing sucks.
Did you get it? Did you find it?
Yeah, I found it. There may be a commercial. Oh, no. Here we go. Here we go.
Oh, fuck
hey,
yeah.
Hey.
Don't go to her concerts now, though.
For your friend, the one you let hit it. and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamin? You act like you and him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian, a Muslim sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you're thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just a minimum. Nigga, you still defending them now. Lauren is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head like a million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because it's sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again.
Come back, Lauren.
Where you at, Lauren? We need you back, Lauren.
Come back.
Come back. We miss you, Lauren.
Quit being weird.
The movement needs you. This is the kind of music we need right now, for real.
I just found it strange. She put this album out, as win 5 Grammys, and then you just like disappear.
Just poof.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen that. I can't think of something else. I'm really thinking of people that have that impact, like Mariah Carey. She won one of those Grammys. Her first album, she continued her career pretty successfully, obviously. Alicia Keys, same thing. Beyonce. I just can't think of somebody who just was like, well, Cat Stevens. That's probably the last person that did that, actually.
She pulled a Dave Chappelle.
She did.
She literally dropped the mic like, I'm out.
I'm out. Peace.
Yeah, she did pull a Chappelle.
It's crazy. We need her. Come on, Lauren. You got to see this.
Although Dave is back, though. Dave is
He's touring again. He's
getting banana peels thrown at him.
I'm so hyped for our road trip now. Like, yeah,
you're gonna get
ready
it on.
Get my party on.
Get it on. Get that playlist going. Since we're running late, we'll just go straight to our podcast, Danny, which of course this week is for Something in Common. You guys definitely need to make sure you check them out. Why don't you guys tell us again where everybody can find you and find the show and everything?
All right, so you can find us on Twitter at Something in Common, SOMETHIN, capital N, Common, COMMON. We're on Instagram at Something_IN_Common. Email us. We love emails. Mike and Kim, KYM, at SomethingInCommon.com, and our website, SomethingInCommon.com. We're everywhere.
Yes.
Nice. We were listening to the last show, and I kept saying, I've got that in common with them. I've got that in common, too.
And I tried to explain to you, they have something in common with each other.
I know, but I was saying that I got a lot in common with them, too. I'm just saying.
It's funny. As Drew mentioned earlier in the show, next week is our big 50th episode. We will have the original John Irwin, Karl Marr, in the house. Sitting in. He's flying all the way out here from Chicago just to be on the show. Our very first person ever listened to our show. So very excited to have him on. Again, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's JAWN. Or on our website, interracialjohn.com. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, MAC. You can find him at Very White Guy. And again, we have two new ways you can provide feedback. You can email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com or give us a call and leave a less than 3-minute voicemail at 657 Johnners, JAWNERS. And we want to thank Michael and Kim for coming on. It's been a pleasure. So much fun having you guys on.
You guys are awesome.
Yes.
We are also on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm sorry. I always keep forgetting to say that. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher.
That's where I listen to you. I listen to you on iTunes all the time.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Yes. And so good luck with your trip. So, I mean, how much planning is going into this? So how many stops do you have on the journey?
11. We're going to stop at every state we go through. We're going to stop and see something. Nice. I don't care if it's the biggest ball of twine. We're going to see something.
Well, right, those on. Will be your prime.
We're about to bore our children to death.
I love it. But for real, they're going to remember this for the rest of their
lives. Yeah, especially Periscope right now.
Yeah, that's the Periscope fodder right there.
When my parents did it with me, like me and my sister in the back seat, bored, but that is the one trip that I always remember.
Definitely. I remember a bunch of road trips like that with my mom and brother as well. Those are fun. Those are fun. Okay. And it'll be, I'm sure, at equal times maddening and amazing. So enjoy it all. Yeah. When do you guys leave? You're going soon? When are you going?
July.
Oh, July. That's okay. Coming up pretty soon.
Second week in July.
Very nice. Awesome. Fantastic. Well, have a great time. Make sure everybody listens to their show again, Something in Common. And thanks you guys again for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. Mike and Kim.
All right.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
High five.